Good morning. Welcome to the morning show on WRCO Radio. I'm Ron Fruit. This is celebrated as EMS Week, and we are toward the end of it. We're very pleased to have Darren Gudgeon as our guest in the studio today. Darren is the Ambulance Service Director for Richland County EMS, and we have lots that we can talk about. But Darren, I think one of the best ways to begin is talk about why there is an EMS Week. I think it's critically important, and those who have served, those who are serving, deserve our recognition.
They do. You know, it started out back in 1973-74 with President Ford, who initiated this week as being the week that we would celebrate the dedicated service of the men and women that serve in EMS. And a lot has changed since then, but the calling is still the same, and the hearts of the people are still the same. And we're pretty grateful to have a good group of EMT, volunteer EMTs in our community that serve throughout the whole Southwest region.
And when you say our community, I've learned that you draw a pretty big circle throughout our area, don't you?
I do. And I say our community because, to me, the southwest part of the state is a little different. I think everybody could say that. But when I say our community, I'm talking about Lafarge EMS and Kickapoo Valley Rescue Squad and Reedstown and Acouche Mountain and North Crawford and Spring Green and Arena and Plain, Lone Rock, Cazenovia, Muscaday, Blue River, the Richland County Ambulance Service. All the services in our area that we all consider our community.
And first responders fit too, don't they?
We do. The first responders have been, and as we move forward, as EMS grows, the depth of training for the first responders is increasing, and each time they're involved in a call, you just see more and more the value that they bring to pre-hospital care.
When we look at how EMS has changed, it's really been significant. If we would have been doing this show when it was first designated EMS Week, the service call would have been the same, but boy, the requirements and the challenges would have been incredibly different.
Yeah, I would say so. Talking to talking to some of the EMTs from our area that have been doing this for a long time, going all the way back to the 70s, they've shared with me stories about their instructor saying, "Well, you'll take this class and you won't have to take a refresher again. This is all you'll need, and you'll go serve the public." That class was initially only 81 hours, and now the EMT basic class is a minimum of 180 hours, and you continue in education and recert every 2 years. So it's changed a lot. I think the people that are serving in it, for the most part, their hearts are still there, and that passion to serve has been passed down from the pioneers of EMS onto those of us that are that are coming into it today. But it is the education requirements and the science behind it has certainly changed a lot.
Darren, I think there are a lot of people in the community who really try to be thoughtful and scratch their heads and think, have we got things out of balance in terms of how much we ask of an EMT in terms of education and how much training and how much time commitment, and to let them serve? I think we all recognize we want people to be well-trained, but if the training is so incredibly difficult that people who want to serve can't, have we helped ourselves?
Well, that's a question that I posed to the state EMS directors group back in 2011 when we met in Green Bay. And I wasn't the only service director. There were others that had said, it's okay to have training at a really high bar, because you want to be able to deliver the best care and have the best impact on patients' recovery and healing. But if the level of care exceeds the delivery, the mechanism of delivery, which is your volunteer, because they can't keep up with all the education requirements, are we really doing a service? And I see EMS becoming more and more of a career than what I had even envisioned it myself. The paramedic level program used to be just a 1-year certification program, and now it's you get an associate's degree as a paramedic, and that will continue to advance. The training for the EMT basic has gone up. When I took the class, it was 120 hours. It's 180 plus now. So it is. It is. It's the question, I think, that the folks at the state are scratching their head on. It's certainly a question that every service director in the country is trying to deal with, because the shortage of people is not a issue that's just the Richland County Ambulance Service or Southwest Wisconsin. It's a nationwide issue. How do we find balance? How do you deliver high quality care with this mechanism? And I think that there will always be a place, I hope, for individuals to volunteer in this arena, but I see EMS long-term becoming more of a career because of the level of training.
There's no question we live in a litigious society today. Is the advanced training requirement in some ways designed to counteract that aspect of society today?
I think in some ways, yes. I would say overall it's the expectation of people, because individuals keep up with the news, and so they hear advancements in medicine. And you know, for instance, late 70s, early 80s, we didn't have defibrillators, and now defibrillators are commonplace, and they really make a difference. They can really mean life or death for an individual. And so people have an expectation of wanting high-level care, which is not a bad expectation. Having all the extra training, I think, as far as your question going back to litigation, I believe the piece there is because everybody knows so much more, we now understand that this, you know, this skill has this effect on the body, and because we know that, and we know that in a more scientific way, we have to respond to that. So the training has to come up. We know that just giving oxygen to everybody isn't appropriate anymore. We need to be able to diagnose. And that used to be a no, you know, that was a word that we didn't use in EMS. We don't diagnose. We're EMTs. We're not doctors. And it's still true today. We're EMTs. We're not doctors. But we are doing assessments, and we are trying to track down what is the cause of this illness, and trying to intervene. So if you don't intervene appropriately, then you're open to a malpractice lawsuit. Even as a volunteer EMT, the Good Samaritan law does not cover me as a volunteer EMT. It doesn't cover anybody, because we actually carry a license. We operate under a physician, but we carry a state license, and so there is no Good Samaritan law. If we make a medical mistake, we're responsible for that.
As a society, we are the benefactors of a more well-trained staff of EMS responding, but then we also look at that challenge of finding EMTs. It seems sometimes, Darren, maybe we forget the good service that we're getting, and what we're concentrating on is why can't we fill the positions on our ambulance squads?
Right. I think it goes back to the balance. It goes back to finding balance. We have really good people, good-hearted people, talented people that have been doing this for a long time. And some of them would probably say, boy, if I had to take this level of training now, then I might not do this. And that'd be horrible if you think about it, because look at all the lives they've impacted. They took a 81-hour course, and they've touched thousands of lives in such a good way. We would have missed out on that. And today's world is, like you just said, it's the opposite. I think people do recognize that there's people in their community that serve them, and they're thankful for that. But now we've changed our perspective, and we're more worried about this rather than the service that's being provided. And it's the larger metropolitan areas, it's a career. And you see it on television, you know, and the things you see on television, just like with anything, aren't necessarily true. But they see that and they think, I want to be a paramedic, and everybody's a paramedic, and that's not really the case. And young people coming into it, and it's not a knock on them, but they're looking at this, they're excited, and they want to serve their community, they want to do this, but they want to do it as a career. And so they grow up and they get their training, and then they move on to another community that does allow them to do this as a career. And they're great there. Their heart is in the right place, and they serve those communities, but The smaller areas, the rural areas of the state are suffering from that mentality of, I want to do this as a career.
Do directors like yourself, when you get together, talk about today's volunteering trends in society in general, Darren?
We do. It's the hot topic. And I mean, you know, there's very few things that lead the conversation than recruitment and retention. And it's even difficult for services that are trying to hire full-time, because if you look at it from a market standpoint, for years, we've had this being done with volunteers. The majority of EMS was done by a volunteer. Now it's starting to, the dynamics are starting to shift. You're seeing more and more communities bring on full-time staff, go completely full-time, and you still have a lot of volunteers in the system, and they're all trying to fit. And so in long term, I think that that we'll find some balance. Right now, it's definitely an issue, and we talk about it all the time. The level of training versus the ability of a volunteer to be able to do that, the training exceeds what most people would want to do, and rightfully so. I mean, if somebody wants to volunteer for the community, there's so many ways they could do that. Do they want to go and get a degree in a field that if they make a mistake, it could cost somebody their life or could, you know, worsen the illness or injury, and yet do that as a volunteer? That's pretty tough. That's a pretty tough thing to ask of people to do. And I think another piece of that puzzle is the call volume itself. You know, fire service has done a really good job in reducing the number of fire calls they go to through education, through building codes, through engineering, design, and training. EMS, our call volume continues to go up. And as our community ages, and as things in our environment seem to become more and more prevalent, you know, allergies to foods and different things, EMS is responding more. And the delivery mechanism isn't there right now to do that on the shoulder of a volunteer.
Darren Gudgeon is our guest on the morning show today on WRCO Radio. Darren is the Ambulance Service Director for Richland County EMS. Let's take a break. When we come back, maybe we can look back at some of the challenges of 2014 and how you're addressing them in 2015, Darren.
Sure.
Hope that you'll stay with us as the morning show on WRCO FM continues. Welcome back to our morning show visit on WRCO Radio today. We are in the midst of EMS Week, a time to salute those who serve our communities. Darren Gudgeon is our guest in the studio today. Darren serves as the Ambulance Service Director for Richland County EMS. We've talked about a variety of things, Darren, over the course of the last year. Maybe we can go back and review 2014 and some of the challenges. And many of the things we talked about in the first part of the program really are contributing factors to the challenges that you were looking at in 2014.
Yeah, you know, 2013, towards the middle of 2013, many of us recognized that the recruitment and retention and the system that we had was really being stretched thin and meeting the community's needs. And so we started the conversation with municipalities, between the county and the municipalities, and working forward to try to find a solution. And many in the community know that 2014 was a difficult year, particularly for my ambulance service, the Richland County Ambulance Service. And there were times where we were not able to get a crew and respond. And it was difficult. It was difficult on so many levels, but I think the difficulty that hurt the most was that those of us that do serve, when we weren't able to meet that need, we took it personally, like we had let the community down. And so we've worked with the townships, and we've worked with the other municipalities and the village and the city, and through 2014, and finally this year, in February of this year, we were able to start the process of a blended crew. And a blended crew being a mix of full-time staff with the paid on-call volunteers. And so we've seen a lot of improvement since we've done that. We hired, the first one started their first shift on February 1 of this year. And we've ran over 325 calls year to date. And we have had a call, a primary call that we've missed back in January. But since the folks have come into place, we haven't missed a primary call yet. We've been able to respond each time a 911 has been called for on our first truck out, our primary truck out. So we see that this is a possibility to make this work, this blended crew. Because coming from the volunteer ranks, that's where I started out. I started out as a ride-along. I spent about 19 months as a driver or so, and then I finally obtained my license in late 1999. I don't want to see that opportunity go away, but I know that we're going to have to change things as we go. And so it was an idea that I had gotten from talking from another service director in the Reedsburg area of how they run a blended crew. And they have full-time staff and paid-on-call volunteers. And so our system isn't exactly like theirs, and we don't have the tax base that the Reedsburg area does, but their service director does a really good job over there, and I've learned a lot just talking with him. And so we're putting that hybrid piece together this year. Since the beginning of the year, we've been able to get three new EMTs through the class. Katie Spry, Amber Birch, Cody Layer, and Connie Stanitka. So four in total. And we've also had one volunteer that has stepped down from the service and is pursuing a full-time career in fire EMS. So the balance there, we're on the plus side. We've gained four, and we've lost one. Some services haven't been that lucky. Some services in the state are actually closing their doors because they don't have the volunteers to do the work, and they'll merge with another service. Prairie du Chien would be one of our close neighbors in the last few years, is one that dedicated people serving their community, just difficult to make it work with volunteers and a lot of different circumstances affecting that there. But eventually they weren't able to continue. And I don't think it was because they didn't want to continue. I think that all those folks, their heart was in it. And I think any service that I've talked to that is on the brink of closing their doors, the heart's there. It's just having the people. So we've come a long way in 2015, gaining those four new students or getting those four students through and them obtaining their license has been a big bonus. We have had some EMTs step down or step away because maybe it's a career change. Maybe they relocate. But it's the challenge that I've been facing as a director since 2005 is volunteers come in and volunteers go out. You know, we've had many great volunteers with our service that stepped away for no other reason than they felt it was time. And they gave us 25, 30 years of service to the community. We're not seeing that longevity now. And I think part of that maybe is the stress of the job, maybe the level of training. But last year was a difficult year for my service and for everybody around. I think that we've come a long ways in rebuilding and establishing trust with the community that we're really diligently trying to make sure that we are able to respond. And, the county board recently took some action on changing up, how personnel are going to be handled. So the initial idea was hiring four people, and we had several applications, but some opted to take jobs elsewhere. One went to work for a Sauk County Sheriff's Department. One took a job in Sun Prairie. A couple of them are college students that really couldn't make a full-time fit. And so we were able to fill two of the positions, and now we're looking at maybe just filling a third and then bringing in some part-time folks to just kind of help offset. It'll keep the cost down, and I want to make sure that we maintain an avenue for the individuals that are on the squad that have been dedicating years of service to let them to continue to do that. So I'm hopeful that 2015 is going to be a good year, and we've come a long ways from last year, and I'm pretty proud of the fact that what we went through last year, that we were able to respond the way we have this year.
County Board, in fact, authorized the hiring for those part-time positions just this week, didn't it?
They did. They authorized it on Tuesday, and we took it to the Joint Ambulance Committee on Wednesday. I had the names of the individuals that had initially applied back in January. There were a few of them that said, if you ever offer part-time position, I would like to come back. I would like to be considered. They couldn't do full-time. And so I talked to the county board chair and just to make sure I was following the rules, and said, I've already interviewed these folks. They've already passed background checks. They've already been in the system. They would have been hired full-time, but they declined because they couldn't do a full-time shift. Can we take them forward? And so we have, and I'm hoping that in the next few weeks, we'll see a couple new faces added to our service in Richland County.
Now, Darren, it was reported this week at the city council meeting that you've lost volunteers. Has there been something, can you address that a bit?
Yeah, I guess that statement might cause one to say, oh my goodness, everything's falling apart, the sky is falling, and that's not true. We did have a volunteer that had resigned, and that EMT is just graduating from MATC under the Associates Program for Firefighting, and they've shared with me an interest to want to do this on a full-time basis and fire service. And there is no full-time fire service in Southwest Wisconsin or in our portion. So for their reasons, they've stepped away. The other volunteers that have left the service going back, October last year, were individuals that it just got to be too much. So they weren't able to put time on the service. And so they've graciously stepped away. We've thanked them for what they get, the time they gave us. And it was their time. It was a season change for them. But we haven't lost a whole lot of volunteers this year. And we've gained four new ones, Cody, Connie, Katie, and Amber. We've added four new volunteer faces to our roster. So I'm pretty excited about that. Having it reported that we were losing volunteers, I think probably the more accurate statement would be it's becoming more difficult to retain volunteers based on training or based on job opportunity.
Were those individuals that are no longer, that you said thank you to, were they actually pulling active shifts, or were they inactive based upon where their schedule was at?
Yeah, they were, basically they were a very active part of our organization in the beginning, but over time, life had changed for them. And so their schedule and their job and their lifestyle didn't allow them to be active. And because there is a cost to having people on the roster, and you want everybody on your roster to be active. You want their skills to be good. You want them to be engaged and keep up with things. I sat down with each one of those individuals, and we came to a conclusion that at this point in their life, they would have to step down, or they'd have to, do something different. The opportunities were given to everybody to try to work schedules and work shifts and do whatever. But this isn't for everybody, and it is becoming more and more difficult for people to do it. Job requirements at their primary job. If you're volunteering, then this isn't your primary job.
Let's talk just a little bit about, the aspect of working the staff, that blended staff that you talked about, because I remember, if I'm remembering correctly, Darren, there was a concern. Can we have a full-time paid individual and an on-call volunteer? Can we staff? Can we make these relationships work? Because I think it's a lot about relationships between EMTs when you're responding in that ambulance.
Certainly. I think for the most part, the two full-time people that we've hired have come in, and there's been some growing pains with that, but I think everybody has diligently tried to get beyond that and work through that. I know that for some members of our on the squad, that it was a change in how they do things. And it's difficult for me to see that as well, because these are individuals who give 200 and 300 hours a month. And now with a full-time person on, you know, they're riding with somebody that they're not familiar with, where before they were riding with people that they were familiar with. And I hope in time those relationships will blossom and that'll change somewhat. But it's a significant transition for the men and women on our service that have been doing a lot of time, and now they're not maybe in that routine that they were, because there's always going to be a full-timer on. But I think that at the same time that it's disappointing for them or it's different for them, they're also, their heart is to make sure that this works, and they see that we'll have to work the system. We're going to have to play with it. This hybrid combination system, the individuals that are a part of it and the individuals that are running it have to be very flexible. So, but it has changed. It has changed how they do things. But some of them have been in it for a long time, and they reflect back and say, wow, EMS is changing every 2 years. They add something new to it. So
Darren Gudgeon is with us today on the morning show. It is 19 minutes before 10 o'clock. We'll return in just a moment. Glad you're with us for the morning show on WRCO Radio today as we pay tribute to EMS. This is EMS Week, and a really good time to remind you that coming up this Sunday, the Kickapoo Valley Rescue Squad will host its annual pancake breakfast, serving 7 until noon. It's a free will donation for all you can eat, and I promise you they will feed you well.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will.
And you can learn about EMS and so forth. So the Kickapoo Valley Rescue Squad, that will be in Viola coming up on Sunday. Darren Gudgeon is with us today. Darren is the Ambulance Service Director for Richland County EMS. Maybe we can spend a little bit of time at your meeting on Wednesday night, really, that the discussion and our understanding of what's mutual aid, what's backup, is an appropriate, I think, understanding for really appreciating some of the challenges our services and squads face.
Well, over the course of time, the state has added a little more definition to what backup means. What does mutual aid mean? What does an intercept mean? And what is our scope of practice? And so talking Wednesday night, there was some discussion, and eventually it was approved to sign a backup agreement with the Baraboo Ambulance Service, which is located here in town, and they do critical care transports for the Richland Hospital and other surrounding hospitals. And so the discussion came up of, you know, well, why can't we do this? Why can't Muscadet back you up? Why do we have to have this agreement? And it really comes down to the state statute defining what is mutual aid versus what is backup. So the best way to describe mutual aid would be a case where we have Richland County Ambulance Service has three units, and all three units are out on a call. And it could be the same call, it could be three different ones, but we don't have any more ambulances ready available in the city. And a call comes out for a call in our service area. We could then have dispatch contact the closest ambulance service, and that could be Muscadet, that could be Kickapoo, that could be Cazenovia, Lone Rock. They'd call them up and say, you know, Lone Rock EMS, you're needed mutual aid for Richland County and the city of Richland Center for a cardiac patient. And they would come and provide mutual aid to us, because we're already out. We don't have any trucks available. A backup agreement or a backup plan is a case where the Richland County Ambulance Service, you know, going back to 2014, was having a hard time staffing a truck. We've come a long ways now, and we're in fixing that problem, but we don't want to have an interruption of care to the public. And so we've come up with a backup agreement. So if I know in advance that I have a shift opening and the volunteers aren't able to fill it, you know, because of schedules or whatever, I can contact Baraboo, and Baraboo will provide either one person to work with my EMT, or they'll provide two and their own ambulance, and we will ensure that the public is going to have an ambulance respond if they call 911. And so backup is, I know in advance that I don't have the resource available, but I want to ensure that I have it available, and now we have an agreement to do that. And with Baraboo being a paramedic level service and the Richland County Ambulance Service being an advanced level service, they're going to be able to provide equal care. And that's not a knock on Muscadet or Lone Rock. It's a licensing level issue. And the other thing that I have to think about is I know these other chiefs and directors in the area. I've talked to Dorothy Hackle on numerous occasions, and John Mathis, and Dan Wilson, and Bonnie Marshall, and all the folks in our area. I know that they're struggling too. I don't want to take away an ambulance from their community if that's the only one they've got staffed for the day to cover us, because we're having a staffing issue. So the backup agreement is a good thing. It's going to ensure that no matter what, somebody calls 911, they're going to get help, and they're going to have an ambulance readily available to them. And I'm hoping that we don't have to utilize that backup agreement much, because our people are really, really stepping up and filling in, and we're going to have some full-time and part-time people supporting the paid-on-call volunteers. But in the event we do, that backup agreement will be enacted, and the public will get an ambulance sooner rather than later.
You have always encouraged us, Darren, to show our public appreciation for EMTs. This is a perfect time to do that, isn't it?
This is what EMS Week is all about. And so as you're going about the community, many of you know who's an EMT.
And I wish I'd have said first responders too, because that fits, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. They first responders are licensed medical providers, just like an EMT. So everybody listening, I'm sure that you know somebody that's doing this. Whether you're in the Cazenovia area, if you're in the Viola, Lafarge, Hillsboro, Spring Green, Plain, Boscobel, Muscadet, you know people in your community that get up in the middle of the night and respond when there's an emergency. So when you see them at the grocery store, at the restaurant, even out on the street, just give them a thank you. They don't ask for much more than that. None of us do. But those two words, thank you, means the world to us. And I would encourage, again, if folks are available, to head up to Viola for the pancake breakfast. There's some individuals up there that have been serving a long time that will share with you some of these same challenges, and the food will be really good.
Really
good. And you will walk away with a better understanding of EMS and a full tummy.
You have a class coming up in January. If people want to spend a few months pondering and thinking, maybe coming and visiting with you or someone now serving, maybe that'd be a good resolution for next year.
Yeah, we've had some applications of people that have come in, and so I'll be making contact with them because we were able to secure a class here in Richland Center. It'll start in January. I believe like the second week is when it'll start, and it'll be right here in Richland Center.
And that will help, won't it? I mean, logistically, that's a huge plus.
Well, it's a big thing. It's a big thing when people are getting into this, because if a class isn't readily available to them and they have to drive all the way to Fenimore, if they have to drive all the way to Western Technical College in Viroqua or La Crosse or MATC in Reedsburg or Madison, for some people that's another burden. Gas is not cheap, and it's another hour of time. So if you take a four-hour class and two-hour drive time, that's 6 hours in one night. So having the class here local will be a good thing. I'm really excited about it on a lot of different levels. I've been working towards becoming an instructor in EMS, and so I might even have an opportunity to help teach this class. So getting to maybe teach the class in my hometown and be able to bring the necessary training locally to help those that want to get into this will be a good thing. So I would encourage everybody just to keep an eye to the newspaper website. Maybe we can get something out via WRCO when that class comes. Southwest Tech will promote it. And if individuals will be interested, it'll be here in Richland Center in January 2016.
Sounds good. Lots of good information today, Darren. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, Ron.
Darren Gudgeon has been our guest on the program today. Best wishes for a great weekend.